And the macrophages that are in the plaque are holding on to cholesterol, waiting for the opportunity to let it go as cholesterol sulfate. So it's the sulfur deficiency that's causing the cholesterol to pile up in the artery wall in the plaque.
And then the homocysteine comes in to use it to create
The homocysteine uses the inflammation to make the sulfate, and then the sulfate gets combined to the cholesterol. So instead of Enos making sulfate, because Enos is broken, it is made this other way that involves inflammation in the artery wall.
And that's not a good thing.
That's not a good thing. So the inflammation damages the artery wall, and you get into all the different problems. Of course, you get the blockage because the cholesterol is all piled up in there. And the cholesterol needs fat in order to be able to be stored. Cholesterol has to be stored with fat, right? They go together. So you've got this fat and cholesterol in the artery wall waiting for an opportunity to be delivered as cholesterol sulfate once there's some homocysteine and some sulfur and some superoxide. So there's like all this stuff waiting to happen that's causing this buildup. And the reason is because the heart is desperate for cholesterol and sulfate. It's the opposite of what they're saying. I mean, I do not understand how they can demonize cholesterol the way they do, because if you look, everyone who knows anything about cholesterol as a researcher knows that it's absolutely essential so many ways to the body. There's very little about cholesterol that's bad. And yet they've made it out to be a demon.
But the higher levels of low cholesterol may indicate health problems.
Low cholesterol is actually a much more serious problem than high cholesterol.
Higher levels of the bad cholesterol.
Right, the high LDL indicates problems, but the problems have to do with cholesterol sulfate deficiency.
Oh, okay.
That's what's causing the LDL to be high.
All right.
So you need the cholesterol sulfate, and so that's it. So plaque is trying to help out the heart because that organ desperately needs the cholesterol sulfate, and that's why the plaque builds up in the heart.
That's a totally different view.
It is.
Of plaque, and totally different view of cholesterol.
Yes.
Than you'd get from your doctor.
It's pretty much, yes.
Pretty much opposite.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
So let's now talk about America's favorite disorder.
Obesity.
What is it? Obesity. That's right. You guessed it. Congratulations. Okay, you win the point. Okay,
Very interesting.
So talk about obesity.
I was really excited when we started to connect the dots on that, because that was something I was proud of in the paper.
Because it's like everyone says, yeah, it's just calories. But is it really just calories?
Not at all. And in fact, it in part has to do with the micronutrient deficiency, because when your body doesn't have enough micronutrients, you keep on having to eat more and more of all the macronutrients, which is all the calories, in order to get enough micronutrients into your body. So that right there.
This makes complete sense. Let me go over this, what you just said, okay? So you're eating 1 pound of food. And in that pound of food, there should be cobalt.
Yes.
Manganese.
Yes.
Zinc. Mm-hmm. All the things that are now grabbed by glyphosate and completely unavailable or partially unavailable. So you eat all that, and your body goes, so where's the zinc? Where's the cobalt? I have this work to do when we need cobalt. We've got to produce vitamin B12. The manganese is needed for an allergy reaction. It's needed for reproductive health. So we need to eat more in order to get the little amount. So now you have to eat another pound, but maybe it's reduced much more than by half. Maybe it's reduced by one-tenth. So now you have to eat 10 pounds of food in order to get the needed amount of cobalt to do the work that your body is desperate to be doing, otherwise you get sick.
Right, that's right. So you have a choice, either get fat or get sick, you know? And so, that's kind of what happens, I think, because the people who resist getting obese get sick. Many of them, I think, have issues with the digestive tract and the depression and all these things.
So the body actually increases hunger because it's hungry for these things. So we have bigger portions. It's like the supersize me of America. And that could be because of the mineral depletion in the food that we eat. And that's done, of course, through the chelation of glyphosate.
Yeah. And the diabetes is quite similar. And this gets back to the sulfate being needed to store the sugar outside the cell in these extracellular matrix. So I think it's actually really cool that the cells...
Now we're getting into diabetes. Okay, so let's just pick this piece up. Okay. Without the sulfate or the sulfur, then... storing of the glucose outside the cell is impaired.
That's right.
And you can't, and that's where the storehouse of energy is, the sugar.
Yes.
All right? Now, so you're taking glyphosate-laden foods. All of a sudden, your cells can't store the sugar. Now what?
Yeah, so the sugar builds up in the blood.
Why would it build up in blood? Because there's no else to store.
Yeah, so basically what's supposed to happen, as I see it, is that you eat a meal, the sugar... Of course, also we're eating this food that goes in really fast, so the sugar comes pouring into the blood way too much, and the body's really struggling to get rid of it, because sugar in the blood is really dangerous. You know, that's what causes all this glycation damage, which is why diabetes is bad. And so you need to get that sugar out. And the cells can take the sugar out and process some of it and make energy, but take some of it and throw it outside the door. It's sort of like storing, you know, your milk in the refrigerator. I mean, it's basically just pour the sugar outside the door.
Or actually, some people have a little compost thing or trash or a pantry outside the house. So it's outside the cell.
Yeah.
They store it there for later, and they use that storage capacity to drain the blood.
Yes. They can grab more than they can use and put some of it outside the cell and let it sit there. And then once they've used up what's available, they can go bring it back in. And this stuff recycles like every 3 or 4 hours, so it's perfect. Sort of like when you get towards the middle of the time afternoon between the two meals, you can kick this in and you can grab that sugar that you've stored outside and use it for energy. But if you can't do that because you don't have enough sulfate, then you're going to have to let the sugar back up in the blood. And the cells are going to be in trouble. They won't have enough energy, and all that stuff's going to happen. So,
and you have high blood sugar. And
yes.
That's
diabetes.
I'm going to read you the sentence that we started with. Now you have the background to understand that the consequences of the interaction of glyphosate with these molecules and these metabolic pathways are most of the diseases and conditions associated with Western diet, which include gastrointestinal disorders, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, depression, autism, infertility, cancer, and Alzheimer's. So you may not remember all the mechanisms that we talked about. I certainly won't, but I'll read the transcript. But basically the going home instruction is to avoid glyphosate.
Do everything you can. Of course, in this country, it's especially hard because we have so much of it everywhere, even in the water supply, probably.
But it's also in the conventional grains because they spray glyphosate on conventional grains.
Oh, this is right. We didn't talk about that, but that's right.
Yeah. So and just before they're harvested to dry them down. And the glyphosate is stored in the fast-growing tissues, which at that point is the food. So you spray lentils, barley, rice, oats with glyphosate before you harvest, pretty soon before you harvest. I mean, just before you harvest, so it gets sucked into the food, and now it's in our food supply that way too. So the take-home instruction is avoid GMOs, but also switch to organic, especially in grains, in order to avoid the glyphosate. And stop, in my opinion, using Roundup in a way that you can be exposed to this. I mean, we have a lot of evidence showing that just spraying it can end up getting into your blood system, and that's probably not a good thing based on what you heard today.
And whilst technical, I hope you found that a helpful interview. It certainly illustrates for me Charles Eisenstein's basic point that there's a diminishing law of returns when we try and add extra levels of complexity to the technology. We're risking these terrible interactions. And what happens to the precautionary principle? Well, we're going to hear in our next piece. This is something of a repeat because it's a film which tells a basic story we've heard before on the show, although this is, more than 3 years ago. It's also slightly more up to date, although the film itself is from 2009. I've condensed it slightly to fit. This is a radio adaptation of Bertram Fayrac's Percy Schmeiser, David versus Monsanto.
No one should control nature. No one should control life. No one should have that right to put patents on nature and life. As long as my wife and I have life within us, we will always go down to fight for the rights of farmers, always to be able to use their seed from year to year. No one should take that right away from anyone.
This is what the judge ruled. Number one, if you are contaminated against your wishes by Monsanto's GMOs, you no longer own your seeds or plants. They become the ownership of a corporation, in this case, Monsanto. He also ruled we were not allowed to use our seeds or plants again. He also ruled that all our profit from our 1998 canola crop goes to Monsanto.
In 1997, as a result of a simple discovery, life changed dramatically for the 70-year-old farmer. A power line runs along the edge of Percy Schmeiser's property. As usual, the power company had the surrounding vegetation controlled by applying the herbicide Roundup. But in spite of this powerful chemical, volunteer canola plants continued to thrive among the weeds.
This canola was sprayed with four times the normal rate that you would spray Roundup, and yet it has not died. So it's a very powerful resistant canola to Roundup. So it's definitely Monsanto's seed that is here. We've created a real big Frankenstein.
The pesticide Roundup, produced by the multinational concern Monsanto, is the most widely sold spray in the world. Monsanto made its canola resistant to Roundup. This means Roundup kills every plant without exception. Only Monsanto's genetically modified canola remains alive.
It was introduced without really much testing being done. And I think even at that time when it was introduced in the middle of the 90s, that even the governments were taken in by what these corporations told what it would do, like increased yields and less chemicals and more nutritious. And I think the governments even believed the corporations.
In 1996, the chemical giant Monsanto introduced its brand of canola into Canada, a brand resistant to the pesticide Roundup. In Schmeisser's region, three farmers agreed to plant Monsanto's new GMO canola. Due to a heavy storm during the harvest, freshly cut GMO canola drifted into Percy Schmeisser's fields. His work of 50 years of breeding was destroyed because his harvest was contaminated by Monsanto's seed.
It came like a time bomb, like a shock to me that my seed was ruined through cross-pollination or direct seed drift by a substance, by a seed I didn't want in my land. And so it was very disgusting and hard to take that I had lost something that I worked 50 years on.
Contamination and destruction of his own breed was irrevocably damaging to Percy Schmeisser. But on top of that, Monsanto turned him, the victim, into a culprit. August 1998, Schmeisser was sued by Monsanto for having illegally planted the corporation's patented GMO canola. He was to be forced by a court decision to pay damages in the amount of $100,000. And all this for a canola seed he did not want in the first place.
Under the patent law, it says to violate a patent, you have to use the patent. In my case, I never used Monsanto's patent. I never sprayed their chemical Roundup on my fields, so I never used their patent.
But Percy Schmeisser would not let himself be intimidated. He filed a countersuit against the chemical corporation on grounds of environmental pollution, seed destruction, and slander. From that time on, Monsanto had the small wheat farmer spied on and pursued like a criminal. In summer 1999, the situation became even more menacing. For days, detectives with cars were in front of Schmeisser's driveway, following him onto the fields and observing his every footstep.
In the fall of 1999, it did get quite serious. Although I hate to say it, we did start carrying a rifle both in our tractors and in our combines. We were that concerned at that time. Not only that, but we would take different roads out to our farm, not to use the same road. It was also a concern for my wife because she many times would bring out the meals to the farm, and I was always concerned that something could happen to her. So it was very stressful to go through this period of time.
Yeah, you might as well get Mark to give you a hand.
Yeah, I can give you a hand, huh? We found out afterwards by taking license numbers that they were people hired by Monsanto and also Monsanto representatives themselves. They didn't even stop by the field. They would even drive into our yard here. And I don't know if it was just a means or a method of intimidation or whatever, but these are things that had happened.
It was scary at times. You just never known.
And the phone calls, you know, where there'd be somebody on the line saying, you better watch it, they're going to get you. So it was pretty scary, and I was very concerned when I was gone that something would happen to
us. And when they would watch us, especially in our own house here, they watched days on end every move we made in our house and for our office would be used for the land. I felt like I was a prisoner in my own home.
They did everything to bring us down financially and mentally, and that's what they're doing, is to mentally and financially break people. They are totally ruthless. They have no ethics. They have no morals. It's the bottom line. I had a trust fund to help pay for some of my legal bills. And some time ago, I get a phone call from the manager of the bank saying they were going to close out that account. And they wouldn't give me no explanation. So I went to see the bank manager, which was a lady, and I asked her, why do you want to close out this account? You have to give me a reason, even under the Bank Act. You can't just close somebody's account out. And she wouldn't tell me what the reason was. And finally, I said to her, is it because of Monsanto? And she said, yes. And I said, why? And she said, Monsanto went to the head office and said to the head office at the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce, if you don't cancel Percy Schmeiser's legal trust fund out, we will cancel all of our accounts with the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce across Canada.
In 2001, Schmeiser was ordered in his Monsanto trial to pay about $400,000 in damages and costs. The court had taken for granted that Schmeiser's canola fields contained 95% to 98% of Monsanto's GMO canola. The judgment is a scandal. Of 28 test results, only 4 back such a figure. The rest varies between 69% and 0%, with contradictions and different evaluations. Most samples were procured behind Schmeiser's back. Not one of them was taken in his presence. The decisive expert witnesses in court were either Monsanto employees or paid by Monsanto. The judgment left people stunned worldwide. Today, even Canada's government admits that GMO canola is everywhere.
And what the trial judge ruled, the first trial judge ruled, is what made the case become internationally known overnight, what can happen with farmers when you introduce GMOs. And the judge ruled this. Number one, it does not matter how a farmer is contaminated. And he went on to say, cross-pollination with pollen flown in the wind by birds, bees, or by direct seeds blown in the wind by or farmers' transportation. If you're contaminated against your wishes, you no longer own your seeds or plants and become the ownership of Monsanto under patent law. We had about 550 hectares seeded to rapeseed in 1998. He ruled, because of the contamination, all the profit from our crop in 1998 goes to Monsanto. Another important issue he mentioned, he said it does not matter how much a farmer is contaminated. If it's 0.5%, 1%, 2%, it does not matter. You no longer own your seeds or plants.
After this decision, Percy Schmeiser and his wife were very demoralized, just like many farmers who had been following the case. Percy decided to appeal the ruling and took the case to the higher court. But after 2 more years of legal battles and now $300,000 of legal expenses, the judges again ruled. If you were contaminated with Monsanto's genes, you no longer own your seeds and plants.
My wife is a very strong person. She has a very deep faith. And many times she has said to me, she believes that she prayed more at night than what she slept. And many times I would wake up at night and think, my God, what am I doing to my wife and my family?
Percy couldn't have done the fight without me because we needed each other for moral support. There was times he was down and very depressed, and then I had to cheer him up. One time we decided, let's go fishing. And there was times I was down and depressed, many times. I think I was many times more than Percy. And he always would say, we're going to live through this, and we're going to be life after Monsanto. So that's what he always told me to cheer me up.
Farmers here are very fierce, independent people because they had to be. They left their homeland 100 or 75 years ago to come to a new country. They had to work together. My grandparents and my parents had to work together with our neighbors to build our country, our roads, open up our land, and the schools, hospitals. And they're not going to stand for a multinational come in and try and take those rights away. And if the government
will not help us or protect us. The farmers themselves will protect themselves and say to a company, enough is enough, we will not take any more from you.
Then we only had one avenue left, and that was the Supreme Court of Canada. First of all, we said to the Supreme Court that a farmer always should have the right to use his seeds from year to year if on his own farm. And the most important issue to my wife and myself by that time was that no one, no corporation, no individual should ever have the right to put a patent on higher life forms like a seed or plant. When I use the term higher life form, I mean any life form, whether it's a bird, bee, animal, fish, or even a human being. If you have a patent on that gene that's in that pollen and it gets in your field, you no longer own your seeds or plants. So you could have one plant, GMO, and all these could be regular or organic, but through patent law, they can claim all your plants because you don't know which one is GMO, which is not. In 1996, when it was introduced, farmers were told three main things. It will always be a bigger yielder, it would be more nutritious, and less chemicals. And within 3 and 4 years, we found out that the total opposite happened. We're now using more chemicals than ever before, and more powerful and more toxic chemicals, because it has become a superweed. The other issue is that the quality is much poorer. So now we have, and then also, poor yields. And to give you an example of that, even the United States Department of Agriculture, just a short time ago, indicated that the yield on soybeans was down about 15% with the introduction of GMOs.
Monsanto's technology contract virtually turns the farmer into an accomplice of the agrochemical industry. He has to buy new seed every year with the technology surcharge, and only then is he allowed to cultivate the seed. The natural right of every farmer to replant his harvest seeds is waived by contract.
I have a contract here from Monsanto, and I'll just give you some of the clauses in that contract. A farmer must always buy his seeds from Monsanto. He must only buy the chemicals from Monsanto. He can never use his seeds. He must pay Monsanto about $40 a license fee on each hectare he owns each year. He must permit Monsanto's police force to come on his land for 3 years after the contract, even though he may only grow GMOs 1 year. And Monsanto's police can go in your granaries, they can go in your fields, they can get your tax records, your farming records, with or without your permission. And if a farmer commits some violation of the contract, Monsanto can take all its profit, or Monsanto can make him destroy his crop, and a farmer is not allowed to say anything to anybody about it.
Now, the multinationals with these contracts are exercising more power than any government would ever dare to do.
Monsanto, in their 2003 contracts, have another clause added, which states that a farmer can no longer sue Monsanto or take Monsanto to court or lay a lawsuit against Monsanto, no matter for what reason it could be, whether it's poor seed or poor crops. They no longer can sue Monsanto. Monsanto takes their rights away of a farmer even taking Monsanto to court. So all their freedom speech, expression is taken away, total domination and control by a multinational over a farmer. It's like stamping a farmer into the ground. He has no longer any rights left. And that's basically what the judge ruled in my case against Monsanto's case against me, that Monsanto's patent law is over and above farmers' rights. And we hope that the Supreme Court will change that and give the rights back to the farmers where they belong, not to multinational corporations.
In all of North America, there are hundreds of farmers under the same threat as Percy Schmeiser. Only a few of them have had the courage to come forward to talk about it. David Runyon from Indiana is one of a few that are standing up to Monsanto. but even he took half a year before going public with his story.
Monsanto's investigators arrived on my farm. It was probably 7:30 at night, p.m. They did not identify themselves. I really did not know who they were until about 3 days later. I was informed from a local feed mill where I have my seed cleaned every year, have for 20 years, and they informed me that that's who they were, that they were investigators for Monsanto and investigating me for patent infringement. All they really wanted to know, the investigators, was what kind of soybeans do I grow, what kind of wheat do I grow, what kind of corn do I grow, and the herbicides I use, and also whom do I sell my products to. They wanted name and phone numbers. And at that point, I refused to cooperate, and I ended the conversation. So anyone they investigate, they will definitely find, will have someplace, a positive identification for genetic material.
Also from Indiana, Troy Rush was wrongly accused of having reused Monsanto's GMO seed without paying the license fees, much like Percy Schmeiser. His family had to come up with $400,000 in legal expenses, and finally, after several years of legal battles, agreed to settle with Monsanto, including a provision to keep silent about his case. He is now advising farmers threatened by Monsanto, like David Runyon.
The first thing I advise a farmer who has non-GMO soybeans is you must have third-party sampling and testing of your crop, because Monsanto is going to falsify the results of your soybeans. The farmer actually most at risk in these situations is the farmer not growing the GMO soybean, because now he has to, in fact, prove his innocence. That's the opposite of what people think, you know, our legal system does here in America. Innocent until proven guilty. Well, maybe so in a criminal situation, I don't know. But I can tell you, when you're in a civil fight with a company like Monsanto, it is up to you to prove you did not, in fact, do what they're accusing you of. The majority of farmers I speak with, they don't have the financial wherewithal to fight these battles. A lot of them, you know, I can call one particular farmer I was working with. You know, they had to file bankruptcy, and they couldn't hire an attorney. It's just terrible. It's terrible. And then you've got this multinational corporation spending millions of dollars. They can prove whatever they want. I often say that after my experience with the court system, Lady Justice holding those scales, those balances, and the way the court system seems to work in America, at least from a civil standpoint, is you pile money on the balance, and the one who puts the most money on wins. Our court system is just, that was a dismal experience, and I'm just appalled that that's allowed to go on in America. You know, a lot of this, Monsanto, they publish a toll-free number and encourage farmers to call and turn their neighbors in. And that's all part of this consolidation. If Monsanto gives a neighbor the ability to contact their legal team, as it were, and turn their legal team loose upon the farmer and cost him hundreds of thousands of dollars in defending himself against baseless claims, and hopefully to remove that farmer, that competitor, from the picture. It's all part of this.
If a farmer felt his neighbor was grown genetic altered or Monsanto's Roundup Ready canola, that they shouldn't inform on their neighbor. They should rat, they should squeal on their neighbor. And in return, farmers tell me that if they did that, they would get a leather jacket from Monsanto. If a farmer would squeal or rat on his neighbor, what Monsanto would do is send out one of these or two of these ex-RCMP or detectives or investigators, whatever you want to call them, and they would go to a farm home, and this is what the farmers would tell me. They would come into this farm home and say to the farmer, so we have a tip or a rumor that you've been growing Roundup Ready canola without a license.
And if you don't come clean, we'll get you. You won't have a farm left when we're through with you. And we know if you tell us that you're not, you're lying. Farmers begin now not to trust one another, because if you had a visit from an ex-RCMP or a Mount Santa representative, the first person you would think, well, was it my neighbor that turned me in? Or was my neighbor that said this about me? So it was destroying that social fabric. And I think this is one of the worst things that could happen, the breakdown of our communities by this policy.
The social fabric of our country, it really was... I never witnessed that before. And when they were watching us and that, it was so scary, you know. And really, with the farmers playing farmers against farmers, we never had that before, because everybody was, like, I grew up on a farm, and everybody would help one another. If your farmer neighbor was sick, the neighbors would all get together and help and put the crop in. And now that's kind of disappearing, because you're scared, you don't trust one another no more. The trust is gone. And it'll take a long time before that will be regained.
They wanted to introduce, when I say wanted to, I mean like Monsanto and other companies, wheat, rice, flax, alfalfa, and no permission was given. And the Canadian people and the farmers and the consumers said, we have seen the damage it has done to health, the environment, more chemicals with the four crops. We do not want any more new GMOs. I've heard, not only in your country, but also in my country and the United States, scientists say, and some government people say, we must be part of this new technology. This new technology is crazy science. It's unsafe science, and it's not proven science. And if we've had in North America 11, 12 years of GMOs, how come we don't have lots of food now to feed the hungry world? The corporations want total control of the seed supply, which will then give them total control of the food supply. That's what GMOs are all about. Not more food, feed a hungry world, but control of the seed supply. In Japan, I met with a lot of scientists, consumers, processors, and importers. And this document here is a condensed version of all the scientific studies the Japanese have done. Using Monsanto's data is over 50 pages long. It has been all translated into English for me. That is on the food issue, the food part of GMOs. Monsanto always used the term substantially equivalent. The food is very similar. But the Japanese scientists say that it is not substantially equivalent. The food is different, and that you've changed through genetic engineering the structure of the food, and it's not the same, and it can have very harmful allergens or bacteria, that because the viruses and the bacteria that they use for the transferring of genes are also in that food. So it is not the same, and it can have very possible long-range health effects by eating it. In other words, what Monsanto presented to our governments in North America is false, and that it is not safe and it's not substantially equivalent, which means it's not the same as other regular food. And that has been a major, major announcement by the Japanese scientists. It's very difficult to segregate the grain from regular grain and a genetic altered grain, because you'd have contamination from the pit, from the elevation, from the trucks that are hauling it. So it would be impossible to keep it separate. So there'd always be a small percentage or a percentage that would mix together, and so it would not be GMO free.
Thus, the borders are open for the export of genetically contaminated grain and also seed into the whole world.
If you introduce GMOs, there is no such thing as coexistence. And after several years, it all becomes GMOs. I have also heard in Europe the company saying that all a farmer has to do is leave a buffer strip, 50 meters, 100 meters. There is no safe distance. It doesn't matter if it's 50 kilometers, it will spread. So if you introduce GMOs, it all becomes GMOs after several years. And to give you an example how bad it is in Canada, we no longer have any pure rapeseed. We no longer have any pure soya. It is now all GMOs in Canada. I have often heard in Europe, and we were also told that in 1996, farmers can have a choice. They can grow GMOs, they can grow organic, or they can grow conventionally. There is no more choice left. It all becomes GMOs, and you no longer can have an organic farmer.
They want control. First, they go in and they bought our seed stock producer, Holden's Corporation, I believe, out of Iowa. And after that, they have, Holden's has like a whole family or group of seed growers. And the rule was that in 95, they said in 5 years, I understood they told them, you will be selling 90% Monsanto product or you will not be in business selling seed. So if they did not push Monsanto's product on the farmers, they would be out of business. And so that's what all the seed growers did. They pushed the product on the farmers so that they could stay in business. Because if they did not have Holden's to grow their seed stock, they would not have anything to sell.
It all changed. It all changed overnight. In 1996, it all changed. And it's interesting. The way Monsanto seems to enforce this thing is they go into the countryside and they try to determine who is cleaning their own seed. Well, saving and cleaning your own seed for replanting the next years is a perfectly legal activity. But over the course of the last 10 years, it's went from a perfectly legal and respected activity to one that is illegal. All because corporations have the money to own seed. They own life. And what's even worse about it is this is life that humankind has spent eons developing. You know, we took the soybean 10,000 years ago from nothing to what it is today. And then Monsanto comes along and inserts one little gene, and then they turn around and patent all the germplasm, not just the GMO, but the conventional portions of this seed, and say, yeah, we own this too. That's nonsense. That belongs to humankind. And in my mind, you know, Monsanto likes to call pirates or farmers that save their own seed pirates. Seed pirates, they call us. But I think we ought to revisit who's the real pirate here. These people stole our genetic heritage.
If farmers lose their rights to use their own seed, they'll become serfs of the land, and we're back to a feudal system. And that could quite easily, quite quickly happen in a third world country. But it will also happen in North America. And I think to some degree, farmers already are like a serfs of the land already, because they have to buy the seed, they have to, from a certain company, they have to buy the fertilizers, they have to buy the chemicals especially, for all from the same company. They have to pay a fee to grow a crop on their own land. So I think already to a large degree, we are already serfs on our own land by a multinational corporation like Monsanto.
Mark Loisel is an organic farmer and neighbor of Percy Schmeiser. Together with 1,000 organic farmers, he sued Monsanto for damages arising from the contamination of their canola and mustard crop.
The thing is, what should always happen is the precautionary principle. We should not allow anything out of the laboratory into the environment, especially to do with our food, because it is so essential. We all need food, we need water, we need air. We should not allow this to happen.
Only 6 years later, the Supreme Court of Canada decided that they could not bring the case as a class action. Now, every farmer has to claim his damages individually and assume the high risk and high legal cost.
When we were in Switzerland last year, one interesting thing is we had a journalist who was very surprised to find out that when we do surveys in Canada about labeling GM foods, that over 90% of Canadians say we want mandatory labeling on foods. And this journalist was so surprised. He said, we just assume, we take for granted that in North America you're comfortable with GM foods. Look, you've been eating it for 10 years. There seems to be no health effects. We see people, when you survey them, when you ask them, they don't want this. We are eating this, unfortunately, because we don't know it's in our food. There's no labeling. Therefore, we're being used like a laboratory experiment. We're being used as guinea pigs. And who knows? We may be affected with our health as we speak with products that you purchase in the store. Anything that has soya or canola in it or corn, you have to beware because they most likely contain transgenic or GM products.
In Canada, it was approved by the Canadian Food Inspection Agency. They're the ones that give Monsanto regulatory approval for the introduction. But they only used the data supplied to them by Monsanto. They never did no testing whatsoever. And so when Monsanto said to the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, it's substantially equivalent, it's almost like the real food, then the government said, well, then we don't have to test it. If it's substantially equivalent, we don't have to have our own scientists check it. But what has happened now is that Japanese scientists have taken those experiments that Monsanto said or based their analysis on and found that it's totally false. It's fraudulent. And the food is not the same. So anyone that says that it's safe is because the Canadian government approved it. Canadian government approved it only on what Monsanto told them. Did no testing whatsoever. And that has really created a lot of fear in the Canadian consumers. Because what are they really eating when Monsanto said it was safe? When Monsanto has a very bad track record. When DDT was safe, PCBs were safe, Agent Orange was safe. Now are we to believe them when they say GMOs or GE, or genetic engineering is safe? I would never trust them one bit because they don't have a good track record. Because everything they said before was false and a lie.
Also in the case of Monsanto's herbicide Roundup, there were studies demonstrating that Roundup could be used without risk, resulting in worldwide approval of the product. Many other studies show the negative health effects of the active ingredient of Roundup, glyphosate. Monsanto itself warns in material safety data sheets of tissue damage, bloody vomiting, cardiac arrhythmia, and pulmonary edema as a result of direct contact or ingestion of the toxin.
And now they have found that Roundup, studies done in Oregon, shows that it is the third biggest cause of farm-related illnesses in the state of California. And eventually, originally, we were told by Monsanto, Roundup is so safe, you could drink it.
With the advent of gene technology, the chemical industry entered into the business of plant breeding. DuPont and Monsanto bought seed producers for about $12.5 billion in 10 years. Today, the two chemical giants are also the biggest plant breeders in the world, producing about three-quarters of the world's GMO crops.
Many farmers are asking, many people are asking, can you ever bring back out of the environment once you introduce a life-giving form? And the answer that I've received from scientists all over the world at the present time, there is no known way to recall a new life form that has been introduced. So that is something that people around the world, farmers especially, and governments have to realize. Once you introduce it, it's going to be there for always. I will never see GMO-free canola in my lifetime in Canada. All our seed is contaminated, our soybeans are contaminated, and as I said, I will never see the return to non-GMO canola. It is all contaminated.
The height of gene technology cynicism is the so-called Terminator technology. It makes the farmers biologically dependent on the corporations. The plants are genetically modified in such a way that they are able to germinate only once. Sowing the harvest seeds is pointless. The harvest is dead.
Well, a terminator plant or seed is that when the seed of a plant reaches a certain age of maturity, just before it is total mature, the terminator gene will kick in and will destroy the germination of that seed.
which means it could not be used for seed the following year. So you would have to go back as a farmer to buy seed the next year because the germination of that seed was killed by the terminator gene. When the terminator gene, that plant, blossoms and the pollen flow from it, will also then get into other plants and kill other plants when those seeds almost reach the stage of maturity. So it will not only affect the terminator gene plant that it was put into, it will also affect other plants and kill them. Or not kill them, but the seed will become sterile.
And we carry that a little farther now. And if, like Monsanto's lawyer has said, that they own anything they put that seed in or they develop, what about if you put a gene into a human being? Does that say they own me? Does that say they own you? The other issue in my case that has to be addressed is this. If you patent a gene and you put it into any life-giving form and you put it into the environment and you cannot control it, then should you maintain the rights to that patent? Because you can't control it and you're destroying the property of others. So then you should lose the rights to that patent. And you should also be liable for the liability and the damage it causes. That's another issue in my case. I was from one end of South Africa, whether it was Johannesburg or Durban or Cape Town. Cape Town, where the parliament is at, I was invited to speak there. And an incident happened at the parliament that I'll never forget. And one of Monsanto's representatives also had given a small presentation, and I had given a presentation regards how their seeds and plants and soil could be contaminated. And coming out of the assembly, the parliament assembly, I ran face-to-face into Monsanto's representative from Johannesburg, and he was very, very, rude. And he said to me, and shaking his fist in my face, said, nobody stands up to Monsanto. We're going to get you, and we're going to destroy you. And and he also went on to say that when I get back to Canada, I was going to be in big trouble. And sure enough, 3 weeks later, when I got back to Canada, Monsanto launched another lawsuit against me for $1 million. And for all their court costs, because they said I was stubborn, I was arrogant, I didn't do what Monsanto wanted. And after another year of trial, the judge, the same judge as the first one that I had in the federal court, awarded Monsanto $153,000 of court costs. They didn't get the million. So I am now faced with an additional cost if I would lose my case in the Supreme Court. But that shows you how they go out to intimidate, harass, and put a fear into people by threats of lawsuit and also doing lawsuits against farmers.
In May 2004, the Supreme Court of Canada announced its decision. 1. Percy Schmeiser did infringe upon the patent owned by Monsanto Corporation by illegally seeding his canola, which was contaminated with Monsanto's GMO seed. And 2. Because he did not actively use the patent, he is not required to pay any damages to Monsanto. At the same time as the judgment is being announced in Ottawa, Percy Schmeiser and his lawyer, Terry Zakreski, give a press conference in Saskatoon.
There was, approximately $200,000 judgment that was set aside by the Supreme Court of Canada today, and that to Percy is a fairly major victory.
Well, I really feel that the fact that I can save my farm, save my home without paying the cost to Monsanto, I was looking at a $200,000 bill. So that is a major victory to me.
And the first thing I said, I got a roof over my head. And that was very important to me.
The court rules further. The patent on the gene allows the owner to control the entire plant. That is, the patent on the gene has priority over the ownership of the plant.
Well, it says Schmeiser loses court battle to Monsanto. And as I said, and just was talking to another lawyer, that it could be the biggest win
for us or for the people concerned about GMOs. And time will only tell. And I'm sure that the Supreme Court in 4 or 5 years will have to revisit, because with the results of their decision could mean that a corporation could control almost anything that they put their genes into or anything they put their patents on. That's the way it stands right now. Also, some people, legal people, have expressed that maybe it was a wise decision that eventually now Monsanto will be faced to be able to have to control what they put into the environment for on the liability issue. And if they put something in the environment that they apparently, and it's known, they can't control, they'll take a second look at it if they put something in there, and they're going to end up with massive lawsuits which can break the company. Well, if you go back to what Monsanto's lawyer, Hughes, said, he says it's like patenting a piece of steel on the side of a car. We're not claiming the whole car, but only the piece of steel. But the Supreme Court went farther than that. If every farmer would phone up Monsanto and say, I think there's some of your GMO canola or soybeans in my field, come and get it. We don't want it here. Or we think some of your GMO seeds of canola or soybeans are in my seed, come and get it. How would Monsanto be able to take a plant out of a farmer's field? How would they know if it's a canola plant when it's the seed is the same and the flower is the same? So Monsanto couldn't do it.
The ground of appeal that we were wanting to win on was the one that would say that, you know, just because you have a patent to a gene or a cell, that doesn't give you a patent to a plant. The other part of the problem is what responsibilities do biotech companies have to farmers for patented material that escapes and causes damage? That issue is yet to come up. Although the, in that respect, the legal battle is, as far as Percy is concerned, is drawn to a close, and many, many people around the world had pegged their hopes on that ground of appeal and hope that we would succeed, but I don't think it ends the war. The war is going to continue. It'll continue in a different form. I think this is a matter that Parliament needs seriously to look at. The impact, if now we're going to say in this country that you can give patents to people that allow them to control organisms that spread themselves around, that raises implications that were raised in this case that need to be addressed by Parliament, and I hope they're advised to do so.
But I want to ask you a question. It's been reported by our national broadcaster this morning that the Supreme Court ruled that you deliberately planted a genetically modified Monsanto seed in your crops. And I just want to know if this is a correct report or if you could straighten the record for that for once and for all.
In my view, if you're not planting something intending to grow a Roundup-ready crop, meaning some crop you're intending to spray with Roundup, you know, I don't see where that goes. But as far as the Supreme Court was concerned, and the lower courts latched onto that too, the cultivation of plants with the gene in it was sufficient to be infringement.
Today, as I said, it's a personal victory. 6 years of legal battle. When we stood up to Monsanto back in 1998, we never realized it would ever go this far. And one other point I'd like to make, especially comments from about the biotech industry. You always have to remember, Monsanto laid the lawsuit against me. I did not lay the lawsuit against Monsanto. They were the ones to start it. And my wife and I took the position that a farmer should never, ever lose his rights to use his seed from year to year. And that was the basis we fought that, for the rights of farmers. And I know that if my grandfather and my father was here today, that's exactly what they would want me to do, because that's the reason they came to this country, to be free and to use their seeds from year to year and plant them and grow them. Monsanto's patent on a gene is valid. And wherever that gene arises, by whatever means, in any higher life form, they own and control that life form. And when I use the term higher life form, I don't only mean seeds or plants. It's birds, bees, animals, even a human being. So now we have more questions than we have answers in Canada in regards
Who owns life?
Since 2004, Percy Schmeiser has not planted canola on his farm and is growing wheat, oats, and peas instead. But increasingly, there are volunteers of Roundup-resistant canola on his fields. He informed Monsanto, which tested the plants and confirmed them as being their patented canola. But they would not remove the plants unless a full release and non-disclosure agreement was signed.
And in that release form, first of all, they said, we can never ever talk to anyone, to the press or our neighbors, what the terms of settlement were.
He wanted us to sign, give all our rights away. Well, that was no way we were going to do that. Just no way we'd give our freedom of speech away, and you know, and that they wanted us that we could never take them to court for the rest of our lives. And it wasn't only Percy and myself; it was our children. They wanted that they would have to, that they signed it too, that they would never speak anything wrong against Monsanto. And that's the reason why we didn't want to sign it, because there's no way we want to give our rights away to a corporation.
Monsanto said, okay, we won't remove the plants then. Then I told Monsanto, then we are going to remove them, I will get help, and we will remove the plants, and we will send you the bill. Monsanto immediately sent us an email and said, you're not allowed to do to those plants whatever you want because they're our property. So I told them, it's your property, it's on my property, we own the land, we pay the taxes, get your property off our land.
Percy hired a neighbor to remove the plants and sent the bill to Monsanto for a total amount of $600 Canadian. Monsanto refused to pay, and Louise Schmeiser filed a claim in the local small claims court.
Can you imagine the embarrassment to Monsanto, a billion-dollar corporation, coming to court for $600? But 5 minutes before the trial, Monsanto agreed to settle out of court. And they agreed that there would be no gag order. My wife and I could talk about it. I could talk to you about it here tonight. So it was not only a great victory for ourselves, but now it opened it up for all farmers in every part of the world. If you are contaminated, you now have an avenue where you can take not only Monsanto, you could take Bayer, Syngenta, DuPont to court if you are contaminated, because now a precedent has been established.
Percy and Louise Schmeiser have given the world a wake-up call. The jury honors the Schmeisers for their courage in defending biodiversity and farmers' rights and challenging the environmental and moral perversity of current interpretations of patent laws. It's with very great pleasure that I present the 2007 Ride Loudly Award to Percy and Louise Schmeiser.
When I travel around the world and I meet so many people, so many organizations that have such a dedication, they want good food, they want safe food, and they don't want the environment, our air, our land, our soil, contaminated with poisons. And then when I see how hard these people work and for what they believe in, it gives me the courage and the strength to carry on.
My wife and I have 5 children, 15 grandchildren, and 1 great-grandchild. And we often thought, what kind of a future do we want to leave to the young generation? Did we want to leave a future with land, soil, water, full of poisons? And I don't think anyone here would want that sort of a future for the next generation. And we still have a chance to do it.
This and all previous episodes are available for download from our MP3 archive, unwelcomeguests.net/archive. Our theme tune is by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie.